Hi there, welcome to our Soul Food Broadcast, a ministry of Calvary Chapel, Princeton, West Virginia.
Shalom. You know you're getting old when time moves faster and you move slower. You know you're getting old when your back goes out more than you do. You know, wife would have been here today, but as some of you already know, our oldest great-grandson may be baptized today over at the Fellowship Baptist Church. So she didn't want to miss that in case he's already accepted Jesus, but he's a little concerned about that water on the floor. But anyway, she didn't want to miss that if it does happen today. So. And his granddad, Steve, that we had his ordination last Sunday, is going to be able to perform that baptism for him. So it's a great pleasure. I remember the time that I had the privilege of baptizing our grandchildren. And so I know Steve's going to have a wonderful time. We got two more little ones coming along here, or three more little ones coming along that might be also baptized by him. Ever since I can remember, as a young child, I was interested in science fiction stories. And that's different than science fantasy. Science fantasy has probably never happened. It's just out of this worldly stuff. I mean, like Star Wars, it's a science fantasy. But then there's things like, when you think about it, and stories that I grew up, like on Jules Verne's 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. And at that time that that book was written, people thought, my gosh, something that can go under the sea and be that long and all. And now it's commonplace for us, isn't it? With the atomic submarines we have that can go all around the world under the water and never have to surface. Stories about going to the moon. Those stories always fascinated me because it was science fiction, which means it possibly can happen. And now it's commonplace. Moon shot, rockets being sent to other planets and sending back pictures. Everything is moving so fast. Dick Tracy, even, if you remember that old comic strip, and he was looking at his watch to see pictures and all like that. Could that ever really happen? And now, you know, we got the cell phones, and they've even miniaturized it. They've got little watches that you can actually see pictures on. I suppose, I don't own one, but I suppose you can do that. Everything is moving so fast in the realm of medicine. And, you know, we don't have to bite the bullet anymore to have teeth pulled or things stitched up. They can do it amazingly. Everything is awesome. And I was really taken by this Star Trek, you know, and they had the transmutation things where they could just say things and things would appear. And now they got a machine that can make stuff out of plastic, all kind of parts. It's amazing. They can just materialize it, it seems like. It's awesome. And then, did you know that one of the latest things that I've come across is the fact, and they've been working on this for a long time, actually to make a human body pass through a solid wall. You know that? It's called a door. Got you on that one, didn't I? Called a door. Been around for centuries and centuries. Well, you're going to wonder, what does this have to do with anything? Just hang with me, and you'll find it has a lot to do. Have you ever thought about that, about the concept of a door? I mean, there are doors in our lives everywhere we turn. I mean, there are wooden doors. There are metal doors. There are glass doors. There are screen doors. In our homes, we've got doors everywhere. We've got front doors, back doors, basement doors, bathroom doors, kitchen doors. Go upstairs. You got all bedroom doors. Doors are everywhere. You're not going to be able to leave here today except going through a bunch of doors. And going to a car that has a door, you got to open and get in. I mean, doors are everywhere. You just can't get away from it. They've even got air doors, you know, that just kind of a shaft of air, I suppose, that keeps the cold from the hot. And a door basically is to keep things separated, two things separated. That's what basically the meaning of a door is. So the air doors to keep the hot from the cold, whichever time of year it is, depending on which way we want it to go. Well, from the day that you were born, you have been using doors. Now, I don't know where some of you were born. Probably a number of you were born in a hospital. Was anybody born in a home other than me? You can tell how old I was then, right? That's when doctors made calls to homes. My dad showed me that house that I was born in Roanoke. One time he took me by and said, "See that room up there in the corner? That's where you were born." Well, in order to get out of that room, I had to go through a door then, right? And I have been going through doors ever since. You have been going through doors ever since you were born. If you were born in the hospital, in a taxi cab, on the way, wherever you were born, there had to be a door that after you were born, you used to get from one place to another. Has to be, or you wouldn't be here. Try to just roughly think, how many doors have you used this morning when you woke up from your bed? How many doors have you used to get here, right where you are right now? Just think back, roughly. You know, I don't need an answer. I just want you to think about that. Well, God knows every door. Doesn't he? He knows every door we've used, every door we've come in and out of. If you went into the bathroom, that's one time. If you came back out of the bathroom, that's another time. So that door was used twice. If you forgot something in the bathroom, you ran back, that's three times. When you came back out, that's four times. When you went down to have a breakfast, you might have had to use your bedroom door to get out of. I don't know. But God knows exactly. But even more than that, God knows every door you have used in your life from the time that you were born and the time that you used your first door to up right now. Plus the fact God knows how many more doors we are going to use before he calls us home. He knows the number of them. We don't. We might try to say, I wonder how many doors I've used in my lifetime, being 80 years of age right now. How many have I used? Have I used 1,000, 100,000, a million? I don't know. But God knows everyone, and he's got them all numbered. If he knows the numbers of the hairs of our head, he's got to know the number of doors I've used. And he could tell me exactly. And if he revealed to me the future, he could tell me the last door I'm ever going to use. Now, I don't know where that door is. I might die before I get out of here. So coming into that door would have been the last door I ever used. Now, I know that kind of sounds macabre, but we had a friend some years ago, got up at night to go to the restroom, went into the bathroom, closed the door, and he died. Had a heart attack, massive heart attack on the other side. He died. It was the last door he ever used. Good Christian man. But it was the last door. There's been many a family that went out to go on a vacation, opened the car door, got inside, or their van door, closed that door, went on down the road, had an accident, and killed all the family. It was the last door. Yeah, these are macabre things, but it's going to happen somewhere. We just don't know where it's going to happen. So it's something to think about. Don't worry about it. God's got it all in control, you see. Now, let me get back to a little pointer here, and you'll see the importance of this in a moment. In Joshua, and I'm not going to read it right now, or all of it, just to tell you a little bit about it, and I'll read the last part. Joshua had led the people after Moses had died at 120 years of age, and a lot of Jewish friends, they'll wish me, said, may you live to be 120, Norm, and may I live long enough to have your eulogy. But anyway, I'll take you a moment. Okay. Joshua had led the children of Israel, and they had gone into Canaan, gone into the promised land that God had given them. And the first big city they met was Jericho. You know the story well. God brought that city down, a massive city, powerful walls, a city that could have resisted many attempts at attack, and yet God brought it down, and Joshua and the children of Israel had a great victory. Now, right after this great victory celebration, and they must have been celebrating all night, when they got ready to move on further into the land of Canaan, taking over what God had said, they came to a little Canaanite royal city, small little city. Has two words, two letters, A and I, Aleph and Yud. Sometimes they pronounce it I. Other times they simply pronounce it I. Well, they came to this small little Canaanite city, and Joshua said, We took Jericho. We brought it down. Let's take, I don't even have to send all the men up. So he just sent out a small group of men. Take it. We'll come back and we'll celebrate again. They went up there and they were thoroughly, thoroughly routed by Ai. They beat them. In other words, in West Virginia terms, they whooped them good. And so they came back to Joshua and they said, something's wrong. How can we take Jericho and we can't take little I up there? What's wrong? Well, Joshua did the only thing he knew to do because he wasn't sure what was wrong. So he began to ask the Lord, God, what's wrong? And God revealed to him, Joshua, there's sin in the camp. Well, Joshua said, how am I supposed to figure this out? God said, here's what you need to do. Tomorrow I want you to bring all the tribes, the 12 tribes that's come with, bring them all before you. And I will point out which tribes to send back to their camp, which tribe to keep in front of you. Next day, Joshua did that. The tribes were all sent back except Judah. Judah was left in front of them. And so now God says, Joshua, I want now you to bring all the families, the heads of the families. I want you to bring each one up to you. I'll dismiss some, and I'll tell you which one to leave. And so he did. And finally boiled it down to one family. The man's name was Achan. Now in Hebrew, the word Achan means trouble. But we don't know why mom and dad gave that little boy a name of Achan. Maybe it was, hey, I got too many kids already. This is nothing but more trouble. Or maybe, I don't know, but he gave his son the name Achan, and it means trouble. So Achan is standing before Joshua, and Joshua said, what'd you do? And he said, well, I took something that I shouldn't have taken. And Joshua said, where is it? He said, it's in my tent. I dug a hole in the ground. I covered it over with a tent floor that I laid down. So they went, they got it out. There was gold, silver, and some garments. Oftentimes, for a number of years, I thought it was something sinful. But it wasn't. It wasn't something sinful that Achan hid under his tent. It was something sanctified by God before they took Jericho, because he told Jericho, Joshua, to tell the people, I'll give you the city, but don't you take anything from that city. Nothing. No gold, no silver, no garments. You don't take anything for yourself. It's all mine. So Achan's sin was that he took something that was belonged to God. He stole from God. He stole holy things that God had separated and said, this is mine. It's not yours. What is yours is the victory that I gave you at Jericho, even though I was behind that victory. Yet I'm letting you take credit for it. But don't you take anything else. Well, I know when we look at it today, it was a bad decision that Joshua had to make. It was a hard decision. And so what happened was God said, I don't want that before me at all. So Joshua, his wife, his children, any cattle that he had, any sheep he had, any goats he had, anything that he owned, everything that he owned, all his sons and daughters, everything was brought before Joshua. Joshua put them down into a valley, and all of Israel gathered around, and they stoned them with stones. The people, the animals, everything. When the people were through casting their huge stones, nothing was alive in that valley. And then they set fire to it, and all of it was consumed up completely. Nothing was left but maybe bones. I don't know how intense the fire was. From that day on, that valley was called by Israel the Valley of Achor. And Achor is a derivative of the name Achan, the Valley of Achor. And from that moment on, it was a burr under the saddle of Israel. It was something caught in the claw of their throat. They couldn't swallow it. It was the lowest point in Israel's life. And we don't like to be reminded of the Valley of Achor. That's where we really, really let God down. And so they had borne this problem for centuries. And if you ever really wanted to remind a Jew, put him in his place and drag him down physically, mentally, and spiritually, you just mentioned, hey, don't forget the Valley of Achor. When their pride had made them think, we can take Jericho, but we can't beat Ai. So it was a real problem to them. Until Hosea, many centuries later, Hosea the prophet, or in Hebrew, Hoshea, but Hosea, gave this promise to Israel in chapter 2, beginning with verse 13. And this is a word of Hosea to the people of Israel. I will visit upon her the days of Balaam, wherein she burned incense to them, and she decked herself with her earrings and her jewels, and she went after her lovers and forgot me, saith the Lord. I'm going to visit these days upon Israel, and I've been doing it. And if you go back through Israel's history, you see many, many times she had followed after the Baalim, the gods, the goddesses, and she forgot God. And the story of Israel up to this point is being how many times God had to whoop her. God had to put heavy burdens on her because she'd do pretty good, then she'd go right back to sinning again. So God says, okay, this is it. Now, Look at verse 14. Therefore, this is a restoration of Israel. Behold, I will allure her and bring her into the wilderness and speak comfortably unto her. And I will give her her vineyard from thence and the valley of Achor for a door of hope. Isn't that an interesting prophecy? That one time in Israel's life that she could look at as one of the lowest ebbs in her life, God says, in that very same valley, and he calls it by name, the Valley of Achor. Now, there are many, many other places he could have pointed out and said, here's a time you failed me. Here's a time you left me. Here's a time you did what I said not to do. There have been many a times he could have done that, but he chose that one in particular. The Valley of Achor, the lowest time. I'm going to put a door of hope right in that. Now, I want you to use your imagination. The Bible speaks, as Jesus does in the New Testament, of gates. And I'm sure you've heard about these gates. One gate is a very large gate. It's Satan's gate. I want you to picture, if you can, if I had a big blackboard behind me to demonstrate it. But let's say on this side is a large gate. It's a vertical, but we're talking about a wide one. Large gate. Now, you could go down through that gate and you could see everything. Murder, thievery, licentiousness, hatred, bitterness, drugs, sex, pornography, everything. He's got everything you can imagine in this wide gate of Satan. Anything you could imagine. The most horrible things you could imagine. He's got it there. That's in his gate. And what he says and has been saying to the world and is saying and will say for as long as this world exists, anywhere you want to come in to my kingdom, you come in. I don't care. You choose your sin. You choose your rebellion. You choose your thing that you feel will give you the most pleasure. You choose it and come on in. I was just reading this morning that the estimated deaths just from drugs in our country in 2016, estimated number of deaths just by overdose and by drugs is over 50,000. That's just in 1 year. Over 50,000 people had chosen to go in by Satan's door, by the door of drugs. And it ended up in 50,000 deaths. Now, notice what happens. Satan says, come on in, anywhere you want to. So you got your choice. Look, I'm not a hard taskmaster. I don't tell you have to go in this way. Or you go in that way. You come in any way you want. Aren't I good to you? Don't I treat you nice? Get anything you want. Any way you want it. It's yours for the taking. When my wife and I were in Israel some years ago, we were going along in a tour bus, and we saw a man that looked like he would be a shepherd. He had a rod in his hand, and he was going down, and there was a fence line there. So they were just on the other side of the fence. And as the bus was rolling by, the driver said, see the shepherd out here. He had slowed down, rolling along slow. And in front of him was a bunch of sheep. And we could hear, even through the window, he was hollering at them. And he was beating at them with the stick and all like that. And we said, this is totally opposite from what we heard shepherds do. They lead sheep. They protect sheep. They say, come follow me. This guy is driving them, beating them, and moving them on. Well, when we got up a little bit further, we saw a truck sitting up there, had its back doors open, and some wooden things had been put out along the side of the truck, very wide. And the fella was keeping the sheep going a certain way, and finally they got into these wide wooden things that had been put near the truck. And then as they went on, it got narrower and narrower and narrower until finally there's only one place for them to go, and that was in the truck. Couldn't get away. He was behind them. He was driving them. And just after we passed that, the driver said, now what he's doing, he's taking the sheep to market to be slaughtered. Do you get the picture? This is what Satan does. He says, come in any way you want to. And it's a wide gate. My goodness, I've got no laws, no rules here telling me how they got to do this or that. So you go in. And what happens, though, with the passing of time, what happens? It gets narrower and narrower and narrower. The druggie. He says, starts out on maybe something simple. Okay, it gives me a pretty good high. But soon, that's not high enough. He has to get something a little stronger. And then that's good for a while. Then he has to get something a little stronger still. What he doesn't realize, he's being driven to a place where it's going to crush him. No way out. No way out. This is death. And like I said, over 50,000 last year had got to that crushing point. No way out. If that's true in our earthly life now, just imagine back in Joshua's time and Hosea's time, when Hosea said, at the crushing point, when there's no way out, when you can see this is it, this is the end, I have no escape. What does God say? I'll build a door. I'll build a door right there. You know, if you ever got in a tunnel, and I used to explore caves, and I'd get in these tunnels sometimes, and you'd go along and get narrower and narrower and narrower until finally you couldn't see. It got so narrow you couldn't get up in it. And just kept getting narrower and narrower. I'd just have to back out all the way. But I remember one time I was in a situation like that, and I got there and I saw that this thing, it just got so near I couldn't go any further. But I remembered passing a little open space back behind me, so I crawled backwards, got to that, and went through it, and got out into a big cavern. That would be the most hopeful door that you could ever come across. If you were in a place where you say, there's no way out, and I can't get out. And I can't go back because I've pushed this far. I'm locked in. And all of a sudden, a door appears before you. How would that make you feel? Wow. There's escape. There's a way out. Well, that's exactly what happens. Because at first, and I could have picked any other subject that I wanted to. But the druggie says, I'm finding that less and less of this world is giving me joy. You'd say about a druggie, what about these beautiful mountains and the streams and the clouds? No. All he's concerned about is getting that next fix. You see, all that stuff doesn't interest him anymore. How about the moon, the stars, the planets? All want to know about? No. All I want is a fix. Give me the next one that gives me the high I need. Actually, it's giving him the low. And he thinks he's high, but he's getting lower. He's getting tighter and tighter. Nothing is pleasing him. Nothing is interesting to him except getting the next fix. And then he's down to where nothing means anything except the needle or the snip or whatever he does, or she. And it's the last door that they ever entered in, because it was death. But God says there is hope. There's hope. Now, that's what God promised to Hosea, to the people. The door in the valley of Achor, I'm putting a door. Now remember, a while ago I was talking about all the doors of our lives, how many different kinds of doors we've been in and out of. Some doors, if we were honest, we'd probably look back if God showed it and say, oh, I would to God, I would never have gone through that door. Other doors, we look back and we say, that was a sad door. You go to bid farewell to a friend or someone who had died. That was a sad door. Other doors might be happy doors. Oh, that was a hospital door that we went in to see the birth of our firstborn or whatever. Yeah, all kind of doors. And if God showed us every single door we had been in and out of, I'm sure it'd be a lot of embarrassment, be some praises, because we'd been in through church doors. We'd heard the message preached and all. But of all the doors that we have ever been in and will ever be in until the day of that last door, wherever it is, whatever it is, might be an airplane door, flying to see someone and the airplane crashes. Might be a van door, going to visit someone, having a wreck, get killed. We never know. We never know. But God knows. That's enough for me. If He knows, I'm all right with it. If He knows, because He has given me a promise that His Holy Spirit will lead me and guide me a step at a time. Now, of all the doors we've ever been in and may ever be in, there's only one door that really matters, and that's the Jesus door. In fact, we have it on the authority of John when Jesus said this to His disciples. Verily, verily, I say unto you, this is John chapter 10, beginning with verse 7. I say unto you, I am the door of the sheep. All that ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. The second time He says it. By me, if any man enter in, he shall be saved, and he shall go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes not, but for to steal, to kill, to destroy. I am come that they might have life, and that they might have it more abundantly. Now, let me tie that up as I conclude. I've said that of all the doors that we've ever used in our life, the most important door is the Jesus door. And I hope and pray that every one of you here has already used that Jesus door sometime in your life. Doesn't have to be a door right in front of you. You might have used it when you were 10 years old and you accepted Jesus. You might have used it when you was 7 years old and accepted Jesus. It might have been just a few years ago that you entered the Jesus door and you're 60 years old. It doesn't make any difference where. The important thing is that you have used it. Now notice what happens. Jesus says if you go through that door, and He's already said, I am that door, notice what happens. Remember when I said this great big old gate over here got littler and littler and littler? Jesus talks about a narrow gate, doesn't He? A narrow gate. Well, that's the door right in the valley of Achor. That's narrow. When you go through a door, usually you just got room to go through the door. I know there are great big old wide doors and things like that, but basically we think, I can get through from one place to another. And so when you got there to that place, even if that was at a crushing place where you had come to the decision, there is no way out. There's nothing I can do. And all of a sudden you heard a sermon or you're reading your scriptures or somebody just on the street just mentioned to you. and you were primed and ready, and they presented Christ to you, because Jesus said, if I be lifted up, I will draw all unto me. And you said yes to Jesus, and you entered that door. Well, it was a narrow door, wasn't it? God didn't say, I've given you all kind of doors you can enter. Choose whichever you want, door number one, two, three, four, or a million doors. No, he said, I've got one door in front of you. Choose that, and you choose life. But more than just life, you choose it abundantly. Now, what happens when a person who goes through that Jesus door, if their life had been narrowing down to nothing, once they go through that, what happens? Life begins to be more abundant. You're enjoying now your wife, your children. You're enjoying your friends. You're enjoying this and that. And we see it widening out. The life is getting now abundant. Now you can look up at the heavens and enjoy the heavens that God created. In other words, you enter by that door. It's not just a straight, long, little old narrow path that you have to walk trying to keep your balance on. No, it's a door that leads to life more abundant than what you've had. You know, I think almost every person can give testimony to the fact, before I knew Christ, life was just, I don't know, mundane. Some would say it just seemed to be crushing me. But once I entered, everything seemed to have so much more joy. I enjoyed singing. I enjoyed walking down the street even. I enjoyed so many things that I wasn't enjoying before. You see, that's what God can do for us. He can take our lives and He can give it meaning, even more abundant meaning than we ever considered possible. Father, only you know the number of doors that we have entered in through our life. Only you know where we are in the number of doors of our lives. And we don't know if we have 1,000 doors yet to go, or 2 doors, or 1 door. We don't know that, God, but you do. But of all the doors that we have entered in and out of in our lifetime, Father, I pray that we have made the decision sometime during our life, before we go through that last door, to go through the Jesus door. For it's the only door that gives us hope. Because that's what you said. I will build in your valley of Achor a door of hope. Thank you, God. Bless your holy name. Amen.